Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. My name is Jeff Hayward and I'm here today with my co-presenter, Susie Rumbold from Tessuto Interiors at Coombe Lodge, home of Design Central Southwest, to discuss designing spaces for art.
All designers create functional spaces that meet the practical needs of their clients, but we all know that this is far from being the whole story. It is the finishes and objects we use to populate those spaces that give them their heart and soul. Art in all its glorious forms plays a key role within the interior, providing emotional context that can make a person feel comfortable or not comfortable within the space. But in recognizing the power of art to transform and complete an interior, how should designers go about preparing their buildings and their clients to best showcase these important elements? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Thank you. And to help us explore the subject, we're joined by Julia Bell from Parapluie and Jenny Trethewey from Studio Far West. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Okay, so before we begin, can you each give us a brief introduction to yourself and your business? Julia, do you want to start?
Sure. So my business, Parapluie, is an art advisory and appraisal company. My background is that I spent 20 years working in museums and galleries. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I set up the advisory to advise clients on buying and selling art. And also, I offer appraisal services. So I tend to work with individuals looking for one piece for their home, to collectors, and also alongside interior design and architects who want someone to support them in procuring art.
Fantastic. Jenny?
I run Studio Far West Interior Architecture and Design Studio in St Agnes in Cornwall. We've been going for about 2 years under this name, and my background was in the sort of high-end hotel and spa design across the world, really. I worked for years in London for Fox Linton Associates, where I sort of got my grounded experience. And then I went off and set up my own business. I moved to Cornwall 4 years ago, and that was where Studio Far West was born, really. So it's a team of two, myself and my business partner, Holly Milne. And we now specialize in high-end residential and hospitality design as well.
Very good. Okay, so Julia, first question, should all interiors contain art?
Well, I think they should, but I think that art can bring a really, I guess it's almost like the, I guess the cherry on the cake in a way. It can bring something very unique and personal to an interior that otherwise may at times be very similar to another, you know. So it's something that gives a client or a person the opportunity to kind of put their personality out there with art.
What do you think, Jenny?
I 100% agree. My favourite projects are where we can work with the client from the start all the way through to that sort of finishing touch. I think it's really, it forms part of the interior, the colour palette. It can either complement or set the colour palette apart from the interior. And I think, like you say, it's all about getting to know, particularly with residential clients, it's getting to know your client, their personality, and sort of through the process of the project, really drawing out from them their tastes and helping them to kind of guide them the way towards what art would best suit their homes. Likewise, in commercial projects, I mean, you can be a bit bolder with commercial because it's somewhere that's sort of a bit transient. It's not something that people are living with, but it's something that you can really sort of go bold with. So I enjoy art. I've always loved art myself, and it's great now to kind of be at the full circle where we can bring it into the interior design project.
Yeah. If you think about clients and their kind of need for art, and if we consider Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which looks at sort of, you know, basic physiological and safety needs at the bottom, at what point in that pyramid do you think art becomes a requirement for people, assuming that it is a requirement?
I mean, we all know that art can really boost people's mood. It can really bring joy to a space. And I think in that sense, it can sort of, I mean, the second level, I think, is about boosting self-esteem and kind of really having that kind of emotional impact on people's lives.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, emotionally, I think it's really important for everyone to have art in their lives, even if they're not living with art. I think in terms of the impact on, you know, people's, you know, environment, whether it's the workplace or, you know, at home, It's really important to have work that's inspirational. And art in many different forms often is part of the story of somebody's life. If it's in their personal home, whether it's interesting. I have a work in my house that used to hang over my grandfather's fireplace. That's a terrible reproduction, but it reminds me of him, and it has a long history. Now it's worth nothing, but that's just as important to me as to other works I've maybe bought to mark a birthday, or because I met the artist in the studio. So I do think that art helps build a kind of narrative around your life if you're living with it.
So do you think that art's important for people's self-esteem?
I think art is really important because it helps people. I think art, it helps their self-esteem. I think it's inspirational. There's some incredible statistics that I don't have to hand, to be fair, but about the impact of art in the workplace, about how it, can be a really productive, mood-boosting thing to have within an interior, particularly in the workforce and the workplace, because it, it adds a different dimension to an environment.
Makes it feel very homely, doesn't it? It sort of relaxes people and it's expressive in whatever way is personal to that client, or to that person. It doesn't have to mean something to everyone, but to that person, like you say, it tells something about a memory or a special sort of place they've travelled to, or it can really kind of...
It adds layers. I always think art adds layers to an interior, and that's why I often think it's interesting when sometimes if a designer comes to me and we're working with a client, often I'll end up working with them for a number of years, even post-project, because they're kind of layering their house with art, memories... lots of different levels of kind of interest that, layer their house and build a very unique home to them.
What about you, Susie? Because you've done a lot of projects in London with clients. Have you ever had a client who doesn't want to show art where you've had to persuade them that they really should?
Yes, we have had clients that don't really think about art. And it's a part of the kind of education process that we all go through with our clients to try and get them to actually consider that perhaps, you have an empty wall there, why don't we put something on it? And maybe initially it's as basic as that. Sometimes it can be difficult to catch their imaginations. And I think it's certain, I hesitate to say this, but people from certain regions of the world perhaps are less, they don't live with art in their homes as a general principle, and therefore, then they're less used to having those pieces around them. So it's a bit of an education process. So yeah, sometimes people don't really get it.
And do you think that clients need some help in appreciating what art can say about themselves?
I think we like to say sometimes that an interior for a private client can be the modern equivalent of the swagger portrait, the 18th century swagger portrait, whereas once upon a time you were painted with, your house in the background and whatever thing you were writing at the time and your ducal robes and so on and so forth, so that people could look at that picture and know exactly who you were and how important you were. And in these days, we often express that sort of narrative through our homes. Mm-hmm. And so what the point you were making about the picture that you've bought when you've travelled, it was you, wasn't it, Julia? The thing that you bought when you travelled, so that's showing your friends that you went to the Taj Mahal or you went to the pyramids or wherever you happen to have gone.
I've had quite a few interesting projects with clients where I quite like art that comments on the interior. So we've used art in a way. There was a particular project where it was a very high-end new build in London, and it was an incredible, high-tech, amazing house. And we sourced work that, in a way, added dimensions to the house and commented on the interior. So we had this fabulous David Shrigley neon that said shh. And the reason why we sourced that was the clients had a slide that went through the house from top to bottom. And obviously it had staircase as well, but the children loved it, and they would slide through it and go around the corner to a home cinema. And so when they came around, there was
amazing.
This neon that sort of went shh. So I really encourage clients to think about the play of art on an interior, whether it's corporate or residential, because it kind of builds a commentary of how you move around a house in the way that you would, from my previous background in museums and galleries, where you build a narrative and curating exhibitions. You have pause points, and you know, you have to kind of manage the move of people through space. I'm quite interested in how art within a home or a corporate setting or hospitality setting can kind of punctuate your experience around the space.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Sue, it's over to you, I think.
Okay, right. So if we go back to first principles then, when you start with a client and you're taking a brief, how do you establish how important art is going to be to that client?
So our first consultation is always free of charge, and we have a meeting usually at the property, which is really helpful because it's the first time that we've met the client face to face. You can really feel at ease and get to know them in their sort of environment. So often if it's a project that is enhancing a home that's already, you know, established, you can get quite a lot of clues about their style, and sort of through talking to them and looking around the house, you can get an idea for what art might suit them. Mm-hmm. And we bring it in at quite an early stage with the concept design. So with our layouts, stage one is layouts and concepts. So by area, we're working out the space planning, and to sort of support that, we have conceptual design presentations to back up the ideas of the layouts. And through that process, we also start to introduce art that we think would work. And it's kind of talking points to kind of glean out of the client, whether it's something they love or something they hate. You know, it can be, if you don't always get it right first time, but it's something that is a sort of starting point. And then we, like you said, we kind of, it's a process. It takes all the way through working through the project to kind of really nail exactly what's right for them and kind of add to a collection. So you're not making those choices all at once. It's kind of a gradual process as you get to know them.
Quite iterative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it evolves too through the across the course of the project.
Absolutely.
What you
yeah.
start with might not be what you end up with
yeah,
once
absolutely.
You've pulled it all together.
And you might not end up filling the house with art, but like you get to include it to a certain point, and then you know you're helping them feel confident to make those choices themselves as well, so that they can then sort of go on and in future add to those collections. So it doesn't have to be a full package from day one.
What do you find, Julia? Is it an early conversation on the projects you were involved in?
When I'm brought in to projects, particularly you know, with an interior design, architectural, from that side, I'm always encouraged. I always encourage, you know, colleagues, other people I work with, if they're going to bring me in, to bring me in as soon as possible, even if it's at the point of if they're pitching to a client early on. Just because it's much easier then to get an understanding of what the client's thinking about, if it's their personal home or a corporate project or a hospitality project. You're getting a sense of what their vision for their project is, and therefore you're thinking, you know, how art might come into that. Often, very often, I'm brought in quite late into the project. Mm. And sometimes it's because, you know, I guess clients are thinking about what budget they may have left for art. Mm-hmm. So they're maybe making that their last decision. Sometimes it's because it just hasn't been high up in the list in the project development. That's where it takes longer because, you know, in sourcing art, it's not, you know, usually they're unique, if not an addition of, you know, say five if it's a print. You could spend months going around galleries in London, for example, commercial mm-hmm. galleries, there may be no painting or photography for months. They may all be installation-based, you know, shows. So it's not kind of like going shopping. I have to bring in, I often have to source work from all over the world. You know, commercial galleries who may have to bring stuff out of storage to show it to a client. So everything takes longer. So the sooner you're brought in, the better.
Mm. Do you think it's essential for clients to set aside an art budget?
Because in the ideal world, it would,
you know, and the trouble
like
is, you know,
say,
I can see cost overruns. It's going to be the first thing that gets edited out.
Unfortunately, yes. It's never the case that projects kind of come in under budget, is it? It always seems to be the case that things go further and get added in as the project goes. But in an ideal scenario, I think by introducing the art from an early stage, you're kind of reminding the client of the, because essentially, what people talk about when they see the finished product is always those finishing touches. They don't talk about what's happened behind the walls and how you've got to that point at all, do they? So it's, yeah, I think in an ideal, we would always recommend that those pieces alongside the soft furnishings and the kind of the furniture design are equally as important as getting that sort of initial space planning and infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously biased because I'm from that part, but I can never understand when there's interiors developed or architectural projects where no expense has been spared in, you know, the fixtures and fittings and, you know, everything is high end. And then the last thought is the art, and it's really not of the kind of similar standard. And I don't really understand, if you want the best of everything, say in an interior, why you would not want to apply that to the art as well. Because I from me looking through, you can always see where the trip has happened.
Yeah.
Where
it's really
you've kind
jarring,
of,
isn't it?
Yeah,
to see
and
what's
yeah.
big budget, you know, budget at the end.
Yeah,
to finish it off.
Absolutely. So it kind of, and it's interesting because I love Architectural Digest, and it's interesting because I can go through an Architectural Digest, and you know, I mean, I know these are phenomenal, you know, homes that they always feature, but I see a lot of the works in there, and they're top notch. I'll often have been at Frieze Art Fair or Art Basel, and works that I have seen, next thing, you know, they've been sold, and you see them on the wall of an interior in LA or, you know, wherever. And you can tell through that everything about that home that they're featuring, understandably it's Architectural Digest, that has been thought about, and the art is really valued. You know, we talk about the expensive fixtures and fittings and all those other costs that run on, but in most cases, art is the thing you can take with you. You know, so if you move or you change that interior, you've got that, you know, and it's not something that potentially loses its value in the way maybe fixtures and fittings can. They go out of fashion, they deteriorate.
I find it strange that a client would look at art as a separate cost and not as integral to the interior design. It just seems a strange thing to me.
They just don't think about it. And I suppose as designers, unless we've actually pointed it out to them and said, you know, maybe that's the question that we need to be asking is, when you're taking that brief, are we going to set aside an amount of money for art? Mm. Also, it depends what their existing collection is like.
Yeah.
But we'll kind of come on to that in a minute.
I mean, very early on, we set a sort of FF&E budget for clients. So alongside the tender presentation and the contractor costs, we're saying to our clients, right, this is all the pieces that we think you need in your scheme, and we budget for the art, we budget for all the furniture, and you know, if they can see at that point then if they're going to prioritize that or not.
And also I think it comes down also to whether it's valued by the designer and the architects, you know, if they see the value in it. You know, some interior designers, you know, have more interest in, I guess,
the hard finishes.
Yeah,
and sort of
wallpapers or things that maybe don't work quite so well.
Very prominent interior designers, I'm thinking Sophia Ashby, for example, whose tagline is "Start with the art."
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Know, that's what she does.
And you kind of know as an advisor, if you're brought into a project, whether you're usually brought in because the interior designer or architect has an interest in art or values the impact art can make into a space. So they recognise that, you know, it's something that investment needs to be given to. You know, interestingly though, I was with an advisor the other day who had a project where she was looking for lots of art, and I was asking how it was going, and she said, oh, the interior design is just panelled everywhere, and that's it, gone. There's no art, you know, so I guess you have to pick who you work with.
So how would you then approach a client's existing art collection?
So I've probably had more experience where we can bring the art to the client, because quite often in Cornwall our projects are second homes, or people are sort of starting from scratch, so they've got a blank canvas to kind of to be inspired by. We have had some cases where we've had existing pieces to work with. And of course, we're going, you know, like we say, art is subjective, and that's for the pieces that they want to keep in is obviously important to the client. So even if it's not something that would be of our particular taste, we want to make it work, and there's always a place for it in the home. I think we would use smaller pieces in perhaps more sort of unseen areas of like the bedrooms, in the bathrooms and that sort of thing. And then we would maybe create impact in the more prominent locations where it's sort of over the sofa or over the fireplace or dining table, where we would maybe suggest something that we could bring in that would be sort of slightly infiltrating our recommendations of what we think would work with the interior. So there's never been a case where I've had to work with something that I'm absolutely opposed to. And luckily we've had lots of occasions where we've been able to suggest new art and where it's sort of been successful in bringing that into clients.
I had a project years ago, one of the first big houses I ever did, which the client had collected Victorian portraiture. Not all of it was beautiful, I have to say, but you could buy very high quality art, you know, oils for not very much money, because actually most people don't want them if they're not their ancestors. Mm. They only want their own ancestors, which makes sense. Anyway, I think she had between 80 and 90, I think it might be about 85 of these portraits. And before we could start, we had to measure, schedule, photograph, create a whole art schedule of the existing collection and plan those hangs and the lighting.
So we do the same. So we would start from the concept stage, we'd measure up anything that they want to keep. And then as we draw up each space in the tender package, we'd be elevating the rooms and sort of drawing them to scale. So marking up exactly where they would work. And like you say, the lighting is always designed then from a very early point to accommodate that art and to give it the best kind of directional spotlighting or the more picture lights for the traditional pieces. So it's, as with the sourcing, it's something that you want to start thinking about from an early.
Yeah.
I've been brought on quite a few times with for clients who've got existing collections. Sometimes it's because they're at a kind of segue where they're deciding what they want to keep and what they're maybe less interested in. Sometimes they have second homes, third homes, they might want to move them elsewhere. So often they bring me in to look at it as sometimes a value, to give them a sense of current valuation. Also to think about the project and that I'm kind of being brought into and what that vision is and where that existing collection sits. And then what happens is, in similar to where you would do in an institution, if you're looking at disposing, is looking at what the real gems of those works are and, you know, what they're really passionate about, either, you know, from an emotional standpoint or from a collecting point of view. And then we kind of wean through the works and kind of do an ABCD of, you know, what's most important to them. And then we either look at ways of either recontextualizing less important works in another home or recontextualizing the collection in its entirety, or looking at gaps that might come in to that collecting, the works that they have, to add context. So and what happens is that as clients buy more, often what happens is they start to keep recontextualizing. So I have a client who was buying, we were really just buying what they loved and what, you know, what they liked, but they also had some other works that they'd had for a long time. And we brought them in and recontextualized what they had in the house. And most of that work is now, you know, British contemporary artists. Some that they had that they couldn't decide if they wanted to keep. One was two fantastic, they'd inherited the two pieces by Julian Opie. They didn't know it was Julian Opie, so we revalued them. Then when they realised they were worth quite a good bit of money,
suddenly
they
liked them.
But there were two fantastic works that were kind of, they were swimming. There were two pieces, I think they were called Be Swam in the Sea, while they were building a pool. It was perfect to bring them back out and hang them there. And then what we've been doing with another client is, as they've built another home elsewhere, we've started moving the more international artists and their collection out there, keeping the British in Britain, and you know, so it's a constant flow. Or another
but
client.
But then sometimes you might just add in a couple more pieces, and suddenly the original two make more sense, and you can form
a
group.
Yeah,
and so you know, you can kind of improve the perception of them just by, as you said, recontextualizing by the way you're hanging.
And the more confident clients get, the more they start to think. Because most of the time, I never use the word collector unless they're a serious collector, because people get scared of the notion of collecting. Mm. But the more they get, the more they start to understand what they have, the more it becomes an interest. Then, you know, I had another client who, just by her pure instinct of loving colour and light, we started looking at artists, you know, over a while we realised we had a body of work that was purely instinctively bought together. And then I was like, actually, you know, if we move these works into your other home, you're building a collection that's around artists who work with colour, light, you know, and it's almost like recreated a new collection for them. Mm. And it hones in their focus, because a lot of people start buying haphazardly and then they start going, oh, I'm not sure about that one. I'm more interested in this now. And you start helping them wean out works of less interest.
Interesting. And you talked about the differences between commercial and residential. Do you want to just expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So one of our current clients is the Headland Hotel in Newquay. So it's one of Cornwall's only 5-star hotels. So I was really glad when I got the call to come and help them design. So we're sort of signed up to do their bedroom renovation over the next 10 years. And for them, they at the time just had prints that had been in the hotel for years. It was, there was no context, there was no sort of story behind it. And I think with commercial, you can really build that narrative up. And for me, it was really important that it celebrated local. We were, you know, it's in Cornwall, there's some fantastic artists, a lot of whom would absolutely kill to be exhibited in the hotel and to get that exposure for them as well. So I sort of approached a series of artists, from new graduates to sort of the more mature artists, and gave them the kind of challenge to work with our interior scheme, which had already been set for the bedroom scheme. So we were doing their top ocean view suites at the time. One was their honeymoon suite and then the two adjoining suites. And they were quite contemporary. Mm-hmm. We had quite a feature wallpaper in one of them. So that was something to work with as well. But the color palette was set. And I went to visit them, talked them through the fabrics. They saw everything sort of tangibly. And then they put together a kind of collection of paintings that we then had framed and exhibited in those bedrooms. And that's something that I want to develop with the hotel, so that every room is different. I think it's it really gives that level of sort of top end. And like you say, it makes the hotel feel like a home, which is what most people want these days. They don't want to go to a sort of corporate environment. Mm. So that was a really successful sort of connection for that. And I think you can be bold. I love colour. I mean, you'll look at our Instagram and you'll see all of our projects absolutely celebrate colour. But I think you can really offset the colours that you choose for your interior scheme and then have those like real... you know, hints of sort of tomato red or yellow that completely contrasting, but it just completely finishes off the scheme. And when you compare the finished photos of a sort of non-accessorised interior with then the interior with art, it's just such a dramatic change.
And it's great that you're working with artists in the locale, because realistically, you know, outside of London, there isn't really much of an art market. And what artists always say to me is that what they want roots to market, they want to be able to sell their work. Mm. So, you know, the opportunity to buy their work, exhibit their work, you know, embed that into a scheme creates an economy in itself in regions. So, you know, I ran a scheme with 10 businesses about 10 years, over 10 years ago, where they all put into a pot... one central pot, and I bought the artwork and we rotated them around offices. And actually it was artists based in the north, and we built a collection. And actually at the end of the 3-year period, they donated it to an institution, so it created a complete kind of circular economy. And the more that interior designers can do that, where they're sourcing from where they are, particularly if their budgets are on the lower end, it creates an economy for the artist, which is fantastic.
Yeah, because you're supporting young makers. And
absolutely.
Yeah. How do you approach a client who doesn't own much art yet, but actually aspires to?
It takes quite a while to get to know for someone who wants to start buying art, whether it's, because often what happens is that people want one work or a series of works for their home. Maybe they've renovated or they've moved or they've just decided that that's what they want to do. So they start off, you know, thinking quite practically about their spaces. And then it might grow, you know, sometimes it grows into complete obsession once they've got into it. But it's getting an understanding of what they think they are looking for in terms of why do they want a collection, or why do they want to start buying art? What is it that interests them? Is it about filling their space? Is it about their interest in art in itself? Their interest as a hobby about, you know, collecting works? Because sometimes people buy work that really kind of juxtaposes with interiors. It's really much, you know, I know some people who their interiors are all about the art and that everything else comes, you know, around it.
It's subjugated. Yeah.
But what's interesting is because I've worked in the arts for 25 years, my understanding and terminology of art can be very different to somebody else's. So when they're talking about modern, they're actually talking about contemporary. If they're talking about abstract, they may be talking actually more, you know. So what I tend to do is I create a sort of, I did a lot of this in lockdown, because what I would usually do is take somebody around a lot of galleries, whether it's, you know, a public institution like Tate or the Barbican or commercial galleries, and I'll get a sense of what they like and don't like. But when it was lockdown, I had to produce kind of like a big questionnaire of really, really, really different art, and a real sort of like almost like a flashcard of, I don't like that, I do like that, I like this bit. Because often people find it quite hard to articulate what they like and don't like, but they know when they see it if they like and don't like
it. So do you think that first visceral gut reaction to a piece is what you should kind of, is that genuine, or do people then kind of perhaps think, oh no, actually I'm not sure?
Sometimes if there's a client, some clients are really good at knowing what they like and don't like once they see it. I have a client in particular who I've worked with for about 4 or 5 years, and she'll often say no to most things. And then 6 weeks later, she'll go, you know that work that you showed me 6 weeks ago? It's like kind of, you know, so I guess it's, you know, I kind of keep some things on the table for some clients, but I think it's good to get a sense in the immediate. But then often sometimes a client will say, no, I definitely don't want this. And then I'll bring it back and maybe they become more confident and I'll say, you know, maybe this would work really, really well.
I think it is a confidence thing, isn't it? For clients, it might not be that they're naturally artistic or they're naturally exposed to that sort of thing. And it can seem quite intimidating to make that choice of something that they're going to have up on their wall. It's quite permanent, isn't it?
And what I can live with, you know, because I see so much art, it might be different to somebody else, you know, and so it's getting to understand what, particularly if it's an interior that they're living in, what they can live with. And things like not remembering not to take an assumption that they might know something. So I had a client who really wanted a Tracy Emin Leon, and it's beautiful and they've got it, but she was quite taken aback at how bright it was. and how it reflected off, you know, bounced all over, you know,
everything pink,
which I loved. I was like, this is great. But, you know, she was like, I didn't quite realise. So then I was like, okay, I'll get in touch with the company and they can slightly tone it down, you know, a little bit. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, they can hum, you know, because that's what they were.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so you've got to think about those things, you know, in terms of what, you know, those kind of things that they can live with.
And you talk about Tracy Emin. I mean, there's a lot of art that can be trend-led. I mean, Tracy Emin's very popular, but what about those artists who sort of go in and out of fashion?
I mean, Tracy is always really popular, but she's got an incredible career. And to be honest, she gets better and better. So I think she is on an enduring trend because she is so good. You will always get artwork that will come in and out of fashion. You know, a few years ago, Kors, who does the kind of sculpture works, the kind of cartoon, like, was very, very big, and then that's dropped out of fashion. You know, so I always say to people, if you love it and you really, really want it, that's fine. But what I always do is I always explain to a client, it's kind of like my fiduciary responsibility. You know, this is what I had a situation with a client where they had been courted by a gallery that was more, I would say it was more a retail gallery than a commercial gallery in the sense that you would get in central London. And they were being encouraged to buy an incredibly expensive digital work, a number of monitors. And it's like you have in all projects, you have, you know, maybe the wife who really likes it or the husband, and you're kind of stuck, you know, wondering what to do. And you've got the kind of pressure of the interior designer, the architect going, well, you know, we've got to keep them happy. And I was thinking, this work is hugely overpriced. It was about six
and it will date.
Huge. Well, it wasn't worth the money. So I thought, I don't know what to do here. So then and it was quite early on in the relationship. So I said, okay, if you buy it and you come back to me in 2 or 3 years' time to have it valued, I can't value that work at that price point because it doesn't have the markers of value that justify that price point. Whereas if you spent the same money, for example, on Tracy Emin, it would retain its value. She has, you know, the Turner Prize. You know, she was nominated for the Turner Prize. She has all this track record that are the markers of value. So it's not worth that money. But if you want to go ahead, that's completely your choice, and I will, you know, arrange the sale for you. But it's my fiduciary responsibility to say it's not worth that money. Mm. And I sort of parked it, and then they didn't go ahead with it.
Interesting.
And they now think, say, I'm glad I didn't go ahead with it. And it's just, so it, there's a lot of vulnerability. I think people can be incredibly vulnerable in the art world. It's an incredibly opaque place. It's quite hard to penetrate. Commercial galleries can be incredibly unfriendly. You know, you can't just walk in and buy work. They want to know who you are. They want to know you're not going to flip it on back onto the market. So that, you know, if they, so anyone I take to a commercial gallery, I have to be sure that they're in it for the right reasons. Mm. So it's, but it's quite easy also to be quite vulnerable to those who feel that that naivety means that the price point can go up.
Mm. Interesting.
I think we've been really lucky in Cornwall to, we forged a connection with an art curator called Alicia Livingstone, and she's got galleries in St Ives and one in Bristol actually, and she does pop-ups in London. Mm-hmm. And we had this sort of mutual discussion that for her, art is better on the walls, mm-hmm. and it can be then seen in situ, and it's gonna help sell the art to clients. And for us, with the idea that we wanted to finish off our interiors, we sort of discussed with her and said, well, if you can loan us some art for when we do our photo shoots at the end of the project, we're sort of gently suggesting to clients, this is the sort of scale we would use, this is the style of pieces we would use. And she's been fantastic at each of our projects. We now hand select which pieces that we would like to include. She loans them to us for a few days, and happy to loan longer if the client's obviously interested in buying them. But in that sense, it's a very trusting and very sort of welcoming approach to say to a client, like, this is how it could look. Take it in, absorb it, sort of see whether that's something that you would be keen on. And then there's absolutely no commitment, mm. but, you know, it gives them that feeling that they've seen it in reality, they've seen it in situ, mm. and they can discuss in their own space then whether they think it's right for them and really sort of sit with a piece and live with it for a little bit before they make that commitment, yeah. which is, you know, is very that, unique.
Is but that viable to do on projects, Susie, for you?
Well, we were discussing this earlier before we started recording, and we used to have an arrangement with a prominent London gallery that allowed us to do that for some of the high-end commercial developments we were doing, where we would borrow works and, you know, they would sit there. But these days they're very loath to allow us to do that. I think insurance costs have gone through the roof. That's one of the issues.
Yes.
And, you know, they're just worried about transport and transit, and they just don't let us do it anymore, which is a shame, because it really is the cherry on the
It really is. And luckily for us, she covers all the transporting and the delivery and removal. So
and otherwise you're trying
we're just
to find
in careful care of the art for the
Absolutely.
Couple of days of the photo shoots and you know, it's really helped us to market our business and helped her to sort of
Absolutely.
See it in situ as well. So it's kind of mutually
and
beneficial.
Great for the artists.
Yeah, fantastic
and,
for the artists.
And I mean, I can kind of understand the galleries because, you know, it's costly to move stuff. And every time you move art, you risk potentially damaging it. And, you know, some works will require crating, which is a cost incurred. And, you know, there are companies that do loan work. They have a cohort of artists and they will loan work. I think one of them is called Gertrude, which is does a lot of loaning of contemporary work. But I can never understand how they make it pay. I really can't.
No.
By the time you put in your technician costs, your handling, your transport, anything you move across London is going to cost you a minimum of £200, even just for a small work, you know, 90 by 60 centimetres. So I can't really understand. I can see why they wouldn't necessarily, unless they were placing it into somewhere where they're pretty sure
that it was going to get sold.
Yeah, definitely.
But you can't guarantee that. You touched on value markers. Can we just explore that a bit more? What are the value markers? If you were advising a client, what are you?
Well, value is, it's interesting because value is really no different to any other form of valuation in any other market, you know, whether it's collectibles, anything like that. So valuable in terms of art is usually when you're looking at value, you're looking at the artist, the work, the artist's trajectory. So where has, you know, what is their kind of track record of art? Where has that particular work been? If, you know, if it's been a work that's been on the market for quite some time, you know, what's its history? Who has owned it before? What is the provenance of that work? So, you know, it's in a crude way of putting it, it's no different in some respects to how you would value a footballer, you know, in that has that art, what gallery is that artist with? Is it a really good gallery? Is it one that's got a superb track record, just like a football team in the Premiership? What is, you know, that artist's kind of performance as an artist? What is the work saying? How are they contributing to, I guess, art? And what are they saying that's new and adding to the canon of kind of art discussion? So you see that, you know, so what you've seen recently, particularly in the art market, is the reflection on women artists who were maybe overlooked in the past. So a number of abstract expressionist artists who you know historically they looked at men, so Willem de Kooning, Jackson Pollock, you know, artists like that. Now, you know, there's been a revisiting of those female artists like Helen Frankenthaler, Joan Mitchell, Lee Krasner, artists who were the partners and wives who were completely overlooked, yet had massively contributed to that field. So, you know, all of those are markers that you use, but it's very, very similar, you know. It's that example that I gave Tracy Emin. Her track record, her work, what she's saying, how she's commenting, what she's contributing to the field, all of that adds value. Her recognition is, you know, nominated for the Turner Prize, other awards, you know, all of that adds value in a way. So that's what you're looking for. So if you have someone saying it's £250,000 for this digital work and you're thinking you have none of those markers, I, as a valuer, couldn't value that work at that price. It doesn't matter if you think it's worth that. It's not worth that. And so you're always, like, even with emerging artists, you're thinking, well, what college did they go to? Is it a good college?
Who are their tutors?
Who are their tutors? What are they saying that's new in their field? All that kind of thing.
And have you ever had someone that, against all the advice, wanted to go ahead with some dreadful piece?
Yes.
Yeah. And then as a designer, how do you accommodate that? What do you do? You can't stick it in the downstairs cloakroom.
Take it off the wall for the photo shoot and then put it back up.
I've seen that happen before. I do my best to... I guess for me, I'm always trying to think, it's not just about the right work for the room. Is it a really good piece? So what's the best work, artwork I can get for the client that is critically strong? That's, you know, a good piece of art. It might never go up in value. It might be by an artist in a region where they won't have the route to market to increase their value. But I want to get the best art for the client that has at least the potential to be either a good set of works or might go up in value. I never, ever say it will go up in value. I'll never say if you invest here, it'll go up this amount. I never say that. But I want to get them the best. So if it's not... You know, I kind of tactfully say, if they want to go ahead, that's fine.
Yeah, because a lot of things can be for their own personal enjoyment. Yeah. It's not always about the value added, is it? The monetary value.
As we were saying, you know, it might be a souvenir, it might be something they inherited from a relative that means something to them. So it's very personal. But I suppose, you know, you're advising almost on a commercial, the future value of a collection, but still with the idea that it's intrinsically beautiful or intrinsically, pleasing.
Yeah.
Okay. What would be your best piece of advice?
The most important thing is, that's really important, and I've been really trying to impress this at the moment, is interior designers, they may know or may not know, but they are subject to anti-money laundering regulations now. So if you are procuring art that in a transaction is equal to or more than €10,000, and remember there's a conversion there, so I think this month it's 8,564 or something, whatever the HMRC conversion rate. If you're buying anything for a client over that, you have to run anti-money laundering checks. You have to. It's legal now. Now, that can also include, because that's a transaction, that could include three works that you source for a client at that amount. And what's not been clear for a long time is, from about 2021, in the art industry, I am now classed as an art market participant. So I procure work for people, so I'm working in the market. And what's important for interior designers to know is that you are also deemed the same by HMRC. So if you're procuring art in that way, you need to be registered with HMRC. You need to pay annual fees to HMRC.
So you need to be registered as an
art market participant.
As an art market
if
participant.
If you're procuring art for a client, if you're buying art and selling onto them with a price on the top, you're also dealing. You need to be very careful what you're doing. And you also, so I know the British Institute of Interior Design were doing a session, I think, last month on that. I've run a couple of kind of free sessions to explain to people, but that's really, really important because it's never been explicit to interior designers. The other thing is to think about when you're procuring art is check for commercial galleries what the resale restrictions are. So if it's contemporary work, often the gallery will say you cannot sell it for 5 years. And often if it's a living artist, you have to pay artist resale right if you do. So you need to know what you're signing your clients up to because they will be on the terms and conditions of the invoice whether there's a resale restriction. And this is to stop people buying and flipping art because it really ruins an artist's market. So if you're going into, you know, a commercial gallery, let's be honest, it's mostly London, and you need to check that because they're trying to protect their artists. So, yeah.
Oh. Okay, and Jenny, what would your advice be to designers actually designing spaces for art?
I would say think about art from all angles. So art is, you know, we've talked very much about paintings, but actually some of my favourite pieces that I've had commissioned are sculptural lighting pieces. So I was working on a commercial project that was, the name of the space had a reference to Rock Samphire. And so I sort of took that right back to basics and studied sketching of samphire forms. And then I'd met a wonderful steam bending sculptor at the time. And I just thought how that could translate from a natural form of the samphire herb to a steam bent, wonderful lighting sculpture. And between us, we worked up sketches. So I don't know at the end of the day whether it was my design or his really, but he was a great guy in Penzance called Tom Hayward. And he made prototypes for me full scale and we were able to invite the client down. So it all became really a lovely process. And he developed techniques that pushed him in terms of how we could integrate lighting as part of the sculpture, or whether we were going to light it from sort of the ceiling down. And we developed this sort of meter by meter chandelier that was then to go into this space. So I had lots of fun with that. And similarly, another sculptural artist, at the beginning of my career, I was working on the Dorchester collection, Cowarth Spa. And in the grounds of the hotel, there were lovely bulrushes and sort of English pond life. And I commissioned a very young sort of student at the time who did lots of line drawings, but then she translated it onto these massive canvases using pins and thread. So really delicate, beautiful line drawings on a huge scale. And we had three panels, which, gosh, now I hope she goes far because it was so creative and so wonderful to see how that could kind of inspire. So I've probably gone off subject there, but I just get really excited about art and sculpture and all the forms that we can integrate it into interiors.
Oh, and make sure you give your clients the invoices for the sales, because that's your proof of ownership of your artwork. So always make sure they've got their invoices.
Yeah, good point. Excellent discussion. Thank you. Let's have a round of applause.
Wow.
Thanks so much, Julia and Jenny. It's been a fascinating discussion. Really enjoyed that and learnt an awful lot. So please join me in thanking them. And a big thank you to you, our audience, as well. Thank you for being here and asking those questions. That was great, too. Thanks also to Design Central Southwest for hosting us here today. You can find out more about the Interior Design Business Podcast on Instagram, so please do follow us, like us, engage with us there. That would be great. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production. Thank you.